Right. Hey, good morning. It's so good to be here. I mean, this is my tribe. It is wonderful. Yeah. Woo! Yes, maybe not this early, but you are my people. Really looking forward to this. Before I dive in, I just want to say there are a lot of Googlers who are here. So if you have questions after our conversation today, there's lots of people here to talk to. So if you're a Googler, raise your hand so people can see where you are. I'll just point out a few of them. Diane's here, who runs our Googler, that's our employees, Googler giving and volunteering teams. Andrew's here from my team. If you have questions on .org, I've seen Jessen around, who's one of our fabulous engineers who's helped create the culture of giving at Google. You all know Zanoon as well. So Peter is here with the team who's launched One Today, and a quick commercial for One Today. If you haven't tried it yet, it's an app designed to get millennials into the habit of giving, daily habit. And we have some $5 incentives available. So see Peter if you'd like to try One Today. The reason why I'm really excited to be here today and to talk to all of you, and when I said this is our tribe, it's because this is the group of people who are thinking, you know, how do I bring the best of who I am? Not just my money, but my network, my expertise, my business acumen. How can I bring the best of who I am to the table in order to do the most good for people globally? And, you know, at Google.org, we think about that question from the standpoint of a corporation. And so we think about how can a company in corporate giving practice effective altruism? So, at Google, we have a Grants Plus Google model. So we give away more than $100 million each year. But when we think about how do we bring the best of who we are to the table, the really unique assets that we have are our Googlers, our engineers, for example. How can we leverage our grants by bringing the best of what Google brings in terms of product and reach and Googler volunteers alongside those dollars to have the biggest impact? So now, as a corporate giver, we have multiple objectives, and I'll be the first one to say that not everything in our portfolio would fall into the EA bucket. But I thought it might be helpful today to share a few examples from some of our partners, our relationships with our partners, on how we're learning and bringing some of the principles into the work that we do. Because overall, what I would say is when we consider each of our investments, we look for the opportunity to do the most good possible with each individual grant, but also across our portfolio. We want to try and help shift the whole sector, the whole giving sector, especially corporate giving, into using better data and evidence, more transparency, and a better use of technology for impact. So let me give you a quick example from each of those areas. So let's start with evidence. We have all these conversations about using evidence to make better giving decisions, but the fact of the matter is there's just not enough good evidence out there. We think there's actually a lot more good work being done around the world, but the biggest problem is, frankly, I think that funders aren't willing to fund the data collection and the analysis necessary to help bring that evidence to the table. So that's something that's that we have set up as a goal for us. And in fact, Bridgeman did a study recently where they looked out at a set of large development NGOs. And, this probably won't surprise this room, but fewer than 1 in 3 of those NGOs had systemic programs set up to measure their effectiveness. And when asked, why don't you do this? The number one reason was that funders won't fund it. So I'll give you an example. We run impact challenges around the world in cities where we live and work. We did one in the UK, and this group SolarAid came up and won. They're doing wonderful work helping to reduce the use of things like kerosene, which are bad for the planet, bad for health, bad for human health. And they have a very interesting business model. And as we looked into it, we were thinking actually to ourselves, but everyone knows about solar-powered lanterns, and this is, nothing new. But when we actually looked at it and started talking to the team about what was blocking them from being funded by the big boys, they said, well, actually, there's not been an RCT done. And we were really surprised by that. No, RCTs can't be used everywhere, but in a situation like this, they surely could. So there we decided, okay, well, the best way that we could help SolarAid is by actually funding an RCT. So we did that, but we lined up with them in advance and said, okay, you know, we will fund this with you, but we want to make sure that we have an agreement that it's a third-party RCT and that all parties agree to publish the results openly, no matter what the results, because we want to make sure that we're not just publishing the results when they're positive or when they're good, but we're sharing lessons as a community even when the results are not so rosy. So that's an example of a portfolio that we did where we invested in RCTs and some of the approaches and new innovations that we thought had the most merit but didn't have, where that evidence base was holding them back from getting even more funding. So that's SolarAid and building on evidence. Let me give you another example of a partnership emphasizing the transparency point. So I'm going to talk about GiveDirectly, not a new partner for this crowd, and you know, much beloved nonprofit. But for those of you who have not heard about GiveDirectly, they do something very unique. They give money directly to the poor. In fact, when they came and pitched to Google, to our team, and at the time it was just a couple of wonky PhD economists. Is Michael here yet? Michael's going to speak later here at the conference, so Paul and Michael. And they came and they said, we have a radical way to eliminate poverty. I'm like, okay, we're all about this. Give money directly to the poor, unconditionally. And one of the executives famously said, Google executives famously looked at them and said, you must be smoking crack. But indeed they weren't. They were conducting RCTs. And what this merry band of development economist PhDs had really looked at and discovered is that if you use technology, and I don't mean sort of like breakthrough genomics, I mean just things like using Google Earth to look at thatched roof huts as a proxy for poverty, or using mobile payment systems like M-Pesa to reduce the friction of getting the money through, you can deliver about 90 cents of every dollar directly into the hands of the poor. And then they measured very carefully to see, you know, the effects on income and health, community level, and the results are phenomenal. But the thing that was so radical about them is that they said, look, we know that there's very good development programs going on around the world, but we also know that there's a lot of development that's frankly not effective at all. So what we need to do is set out a benchmark for the entire sector that says if you want to take a dollar on behalf of the poor and spend it through an elaborate program, you need to show that you can do more with that dollar than the poor could do themselves. And we were really excited about that because that helps establish a benchmark for giving for the entire sector. The other thing that they did that is really quite radical, but when you think about it, really shouldn't be, is that they have a radical commitment to transparency. So I joined the board after we gave their initial funding, and one of the things that came up over time is that there were some employees that sort of colluded together, and there was a fraud incident. And, you know, when typically when something like that happens, NGOs go into, you know, cover-up mode and, you know, sweep it under the rug, gloss it over. But, you know, they were like, okay, so we're going to publish this on our website. We're going to be really upfront about what happened, how it affected our effectiveness rate, our flow efficiency. And that kind of radical transparency around outcomes is what we really need in the sector, right? We did another project with charity around clean water. When we looked into the clean water issue about what Google might be able to do there, we learned that, you know, at any given time, about a third of the wells in the developing world aren't even working, right? So in addition to needing more wells and more water sources, what we really need is a way to have radical transparency around which of the existing wells are actually working. That way, the money and the funding can flow into the partners who are most reliable. So we partnered with Charity Water to help develop a water flow sensor that will measure whether water's flowing, with the caveat that they're willing to publish the results of whether or not the water's flowing on all of their water points globally on the web at the same time as they learn them. So in other words, radical transparency around outcomes to help shift dollars and to shift attention to the partners on the ground who have the systems in place to do the best work. So that's transparency. And then the third one I want to mention is technology. So, you know, not a big surprise here that Google invests in technology for humanity, or that we think technology offers a lot of leverage. But this is an area that we see as radically underfunded in the sector. And when we asked our grantees and looked back and said, you know, what was most helpful about the way that we supported you? How could we be better at this? It was interesting because most of our grantees said the single most effective thing that you did is that you were willing to fund technology, and you were willing to take risk. And, you know, we believe that philanthropic capital should be risk capital, and that especially for companies like Google, who are used to taking informed risk and understand feeling fast, that we really need to invest that way into the sector. So a few years back, actually when I was still at Gates Foundation, before I joined Google, I moved to India for a year with my family to help launch a major HIV prevention program. And so we moved over there, and my girls came, and they were 8 and 10 at the time. And so I'm there working on HIV prevention, so I spent a lot of time at, you know, brothels and truck stops and in the commercial sex industry. And as I was there and in those places and learning about the health systems around HIV prevention, I couldn't help but notice that when I went into a lot of these brothels, I would see little girls sometimes the age of my own daughters at the time, who had been trafficked and who were being sold for sex. And, you know, I asked around and was looking into the issue and was trying to understand, you know, what are the systems at play here and what could be done to help fight this issue. And, you know, it's a really pernicious issue because this is a major, major moneymaker for the bad guys, human trafficking. In fact, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, illicit trades right now going on. So this is not something that we're going to be able to take on without bringing our best to the table, right? Without bringing out the big guns to the table, bringing the best of who we are to the table, and including our entire arsenal. So as I look into this, also talked to folks at Google to say, you know, is there something that we could do here that might help in this issue of trafficking? And as we looked into it and talked to some partners on the ground, folks like Polaris Project here in the U.S., we learned a number of things. So one, there wasn't even a national hotline at that point for victims who needed to call in. There wasn't even a way that they could text to reach out for help. There also wasn't, for all of the sort of patchwork of people who were responding and people who were looking at the problem of trafficking, there really wasn't any data. And the little data that was available wasn't being shared and wasn't being analyzed to look for patterns. So that's where we invested, and at the time we gave about $15 million, making us the largest corporate funder of that in the field. And I was just talking to Polaris recently to say, you know, what are we learning from the data analytics? How is it helping? And it's really helped in areas like providing pattern analysis and predictability. One of the things they learned, for example, that they didn't see before, is that the trafficking, especially in young girls, is seasonal, where the hot spots are, and they basically move in predictable patterns with the weather. The other thing that they've done is they've been able to create a database with pertinent information like phone numbers, some of the ads that the pimps are using to sell these girls. And so just this week we were talking to Polaris and they said, yeah, you know, so one example is what often happens is that they'll traffic these young girls and then move them from state to state, and because the state systems don't talk very well or they just fall off the map. But we were able to use our data analysis recently to track a girl, an underage girl, who was being moved state to state to state. And then when we saw that data come up, let the local law enforcement know, and she was recently, that girl was recently recovered. So this is something that we learned about even just this week. So, you know, this is the whole area of human trafficking, especially sex trafficking. You know, at Google, being a company, a web-based company, that's something that we're also really aware of and thinking about in terms of our own systems, you know? And so when we had our engineers even looking at our own system, because we want to make sure that we're the best in the world at finding any child abuse imagery online, and not only getting that off our system, but helping everybody, helping the entire ecosystem be as good as they can on this topic. So we have more than 200 of our engineers and product folks, Googlers, who are looking at how can we do this on our own systems. And we've started doing things recently, like in addition, I mentioned the funding, but in addition to that, we're now sending our engineers to places like NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, to help them bring their tech game to be as the best that it can be. So those are three examples of partners who are using principles from the movement. Principles around better evidence and data, radical transparency around outcomes, and investing in technology so we can truly bring our solutions to scale. And, you know, I think this is super important, not just for us as individual givers, but this is so important for the corporate sector. You know, it's really interesting. If you look at the corporate giving sector, it's very sleepy. Corporate giving right now is about $18 billion. But if you look at just in the U.S., if you just look at the whole pie of giving, corporate giving is only about 5% of that. We could be doing so much more. In fact, if every company gave 1% of its profit, yearly profit, the way that Google does, that would bring $122 billion more in resources to the table. Now, if companies did that, invested that spending in ways that are aligned with their skills and their unique assets and who they are as a company, what we talked about in the beginning about bringing the best of who you are to the table, we could have just amazing outsized impact. So the thing that keeps me up at night is thinking about not only the $100 million that we have to invest yearly and thinking about how to have the greatest impact with that, but how we can create a movement across the whole corporate giving sector to say, how can we together raise our game so much higher and do so much better? So once again, I just wanted, on behalf of all the Googlers here, to welcome you to Google and say I'm really excited to meet you all and to learn more deeply from all of you today. So thanks.